Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
This is After Hours with Amy Lawrence.
Thanks so much for tuning in. Really excited to take a break from talking about shaving your Fu Manchu or load management or my phone pummeling me in the face when I fall asleep. We're going to get to some good stuff here, okay? So the big game this weekend is LSU-Alabama. Of course, we're heading into Week 10. Who better to help us look at both college football and the SEC as well as the NFL than Reggie Kelly, who's a former tight end at Mississippi State with the Bengals, with the Falcons. We crossed paths back at Super Bowl week in Atlanta, which really wasn't that long ago. And he was so good to us then, we wanted to have him back on the show. Now, Reggie, it's great to catch up with you. I'd love to get your perspective on SEC football to start, because you played Mississippi State, and so you've been part of all of these huge rivalry games, not to mention playing in some of the coolest atmospheres in sports. What makes SEC football so unique?
Well, it's just a combination of hard-hitting grit matched up with athleticism, and then it's a rich just years and years of rich rivalry between really good players that grew up together, played high school ball together, but decided to stay in the same conference. So there's so many different rivalries, so many different family members that went to certain schools, and now their kids are going to their schools. So it's a tradition as well. But it's to me, you know, and I'm a little biased playing in the SEC, it's the best football, you know, in the nation. I think that we have some really good teams in these particular conference. And it's just hard-hitting football. Anytime you think of football, you think of just hard-hitting, smash-mouth type of football. It's going to bring tons of excitement. I think the SEC has not disappointed.
When you were a member of the Mississippi State football team, you played at Alabama, which is, of course, where the big game will be hosted this weekend. What do you remember about playing in that atmosphere in Tuscaloosa?
Well, I had a really pleasant experience, Amy, when I was playing in the SEC. We didn't lose to Alabama but one time. That was my freshman year. So we beat them 3 years. Go ahead. You can smile. You can clap for that, too, Amy.
Okay. I will. So I will.
I had a really good experience, you know, playing from 1995 to 1998, and opportunity to go up and play up against an Alabama was a little bit intimidating, especially coming from high school. And I played as a true freshman against guys that I felt like were giants. And the game was really fast, and the players were really physical. And so it was a little bit intimidating, but yet I didn't let that stifle me from playing hard against Alabama. And they taught us a lesson my freshman year. But we came back my sophomore year, and I think they were ranked number one in the country in 2000. And they came to Scotts Field in Stark, Vegas. And it was a primetime game on Thursday night, ESPN, and we ended up beating them, surprising them and surprising the nation. And from that point on, I didn't lose to Alabama the rest of my career at Mississippi State. But I tell you, I remember just a lot of hard-hitting football, a lot of trash talking. You had teammates people that played in Mississippi that now – we're playing at the University of Alabama, and we knew those guys, and they knew us. I just tell you, man, it's just a great atmosphere. And then you add the tailgating and the family history. Amy, it just doesn't get much better.
It sounds like a can't-miss party. No wonder big-time college football has such a great reputation, especially in the SEC. So, Reggie, I've talked to guys who played at Alabama and other SEC schools, and they tell me it was such a great stepping stone for the NFL. Number one, because of the style of football, but number two, because of the high expectations and the spotlight that's always on those programs. So how did playing at Mississippi State in the SEC prepare you for the next step for pro football?
It did. It was a smooth transition for me. And the thing about me, I had Coach Jackie Sherrill. He was not a modern-day easygoing type of a coach. He was an old-school coach that pushed you to the limit. He actually played at Alabama. And so he learned a lot from playing, you know, at Alabama, and he brought those same type of work ethics, work habits, hard-hitting football, and he would practice you and practice you and practice you so hard that you would gain some type of mental fortitude and just where you would be mentally strong, because he put you through the ringers to make sure that when we did face difficult situations like playing at Alabama or LSU and Auburn, that we would be well-prepared mentally to handle those type of matchups. And when I did transition from the collegiate level to the NFL level, well, I had Dan Reeves as my coach here with the Atlanta Falcons. Well, he was the same type of coach as Coach Jackie Sherrill. Hard-nosed, gritty. I made sure that you played extremely hard. We ran the ball hard, so we were about running the football to set up the pass. And so it was really easy knowing that I had a hard-nosed coach and Jackie Sherrill that coached the SEC type of a way. Playing for the Atlanta Falcons with Jamal Anderson as a running back, Chris Chandler as a quarterback, Terrence Matthews going up against Jesse Tuggle and Keith Brookins. To be honest with you, it was an easy transition because I was well prepared from playing in the SEC and Coach Jackie Sherrill being my head coach as well.
Well, then I have to ask, Reggie, do you get to go back and watch games on campus now even though you're done playing?
You better believe it. All the time. And I try to take my kids. You know, my kids were born and raised up around the Cincinnati area when I was playing for the Bengals. And so I have to take them back home to Mississippi to get them countrified so that they can get used to some of the heritage and legacy that I grew up on, you know, black eyed peas and cornbread and things of that nature. And then also get them acclimated to good SEC football, Mississippi State style. So I get to carry my kids back home quite often, so they can go and enjoy some of the basketball games, but definitely enjoy some of the maroon and white football games, you know, playing against teams like Alabama, and definitely we go to the Ole Miss game.
Fantastic. Reggie Kelly played at Mississippi State, so part of the SEC tradition. Really cool to hear his thoughts about playing at Tuscaloosa in Alabama. But he also was a tight end in the NFL for both the Falcons and the Bengals. So I want to transition to what the Falcons are going through now. We'll get to that as soon as we finish up the update straight ahead after hours on CBS Sports Radio.
You are listening to the After Hours Podcast. This is After Hours with Amy Lawrence.
And we are talking football with former Mississippi State and NFL tight end Reggie Kelly, who's kind enough to hang on. So we talked a little college football, Reggie, and I want to transition to the NFL. One of your former teams, actually both of your former teams, but we'll focus on Atlanta. It's been a really difficult year for the Falcons. What have you seen with them that stands out to you?
Well, I can tell you now, offensively, they're putting up some really big numbers. You know, at one point, Matt Ryan was ranked number two amongst all quarterbacks, you know, in his performance, because he's been performing really well. He started off a little bit rocky, you know, throwing some interceptions, but he's, you know, gathered his momentum and did a really good job until he got injured, you know, the previous game before, let me see, who did they play? Well, before they went on the bye, he was hurt that game before the bye. But anyway, I think the offense has been doing really well. The offense has been putting up numbers. They've been moving the ball. They've been throwing the ball, been executing extremely well. There's been some issues and concerns as far as defensively. And even, you know, this week, you know, head coach, he made some changes by switching, you know, Morris over to the DBs. He was the receivers coach. And then switching some of the offensive coaches to the ground just to add a spark to this particular team. And Mars, you know, he's a great defensive back coach. He's the head coach for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers as well. And I think his commitment, his eyes, and his enthusiasm would do really well to help our DBs. And that has seemed to be one of the issues that's been plaguing us this first half of the season. Teams have been throwing on us very easily. They've been throwing catching a bunch of touchdowns on our DBs, which I think we have really good DBs, but we just have to make better adjustments when the ball is in the air.
So far, the Atlanta ownership has not made a change, and so Dan Quinn remains the head coach. But we've already had one guy get fired in Washington. There are other first-year head coaches that are trying to get acclimated and under pressure, like Cleveland, even Adam Gase in New York. From a player's perspective, Reggie, how is that transition from one voice, one head coach, one leader to another, whether it's in season or whether it's in the off season?
Well, I think it all depends. I think it depends if it's a coach that you really like and if it's a coach that you feel like, well, he really didn't do anything wrong, it's really us as players, we're the ones that are not making the plays. So if it's a coach that you really like, and if it's a coach that you feel like, man, he's doing his job, and we're not, I think it's kind of hard on the team. And I think that's really been the rallying cry of the Atlanta Falcons now, because I've heard like Julio Jones rally the team and tell them, hey, we love Coach Quinn.
Right.
You know, he's a great coach. We need to go out here and play for him. So if you have a coach that you really love, but you're not performing up to standard, and that coach gets released and you bring in a new voice, whether if it's an outside voice, but it's normally somebody internally, you know, that can be kind of hard on the team. But if it's a coach that's not doing a good job, if it's a coach that's not very respectful and the team doesn't really play for him anyway, I think it can add a spark for that particular team. Because anytime you add a new voice, there comes new expectations. You begin to be a little bit optimistic on what you can do, even some changes as far as the scheme. That can really help a team and rally a team in the second half. I think that, you know, Mr. Blank has spoken volumes by not, you know, releasing Coach Quinn, by not firing him right now. So that tells me that he has a lot of confidence in him. That tells me that he still believes in him. We don't know what's going to happen here in the second half of the season. But with the coaching changes, as far as the assistant coaches change, let's see if that can spark the team. But it just depends. If you like the coach, it can really, really be disgruntled to the team. But if you don't like it, then, yeah, it can add an extra spark.
Some great insight from one of my favorite former NFL players, Reggie Kelly, a tight end for the Falcons and the Bengals, also played at Mississippi State. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence here on CBS Sports Radio. Coaches are not on the hot seat unless the wins are really hard to come by. We just saw the Dolphins get their first win. We've been talking about the Falcons, who just have the one victory. Your former team, the Bengals, is still seeking that first win of the season. How much does that wear on a locker room when you go through a season like these?
It does. It does, because you work so hard during the week, Amy. I mean, you work so hard. And you want to be rewarded by wins. That's the reason why you work hard. And then when you work hard and then you don't play up to par, especially if you play bad after having great weeks of practice, it does play on you mentally. Like, man, what are we doing? We're trying to do everything we can. We're performing really well in practice, but when we get to the game, we're not performing up to par. So, yeah, it can weigh on you. But as a professional, you're paid to do your job, and you're paid never to quit. And I can tell you, when I played, you know, in the NFL, I played on some losing teams. And there were times, like, if you do play on some losing teams and you do decide to give up, well, you can't fool the cameras. We always say the eye in the sky does not lie. Mm. So you cannot fool the cameras. If you are a player that gave up and quit because you're not winning, the camera has you on film. And if they do bring in a new coach, that new coach is going to actually evaluate that film from last year. And they want to see the players that fought hard the entire game, the entire season, even though they lost. Because they know if they come into a new system, it's going to be hard enough to try to change that system and get some winning. And they want every player that they know that will fight for them the entire time that they're there. And if they go back and watch that film from last year and see that you did not fight, then you stand a good chance of getting released onto another team, because coaches need every man that can fight as hard as they can for that particular coach. But it gets extremely hard when you're losing, because we all want to win. We're in the business to win, but yet you have to fight with every ounce of your being and be a really good team player and find some type of, you know, silver lining in the midst of adversity.
That is really interesting, Reggie. The eye in the sky does not lie.
Coaches always said the eye in the sky, because let's be honest, when you're playing the game on Sundays, Amy, and you go, let's say, for instance, you go through an offensive series and then you make some mistakes, things don't go right, then you come to the sideline, you always see the offensive coaches huddling around, you know, the offensive players sitting on the bench. But they're going over that particular series that you just left off the field. They're asking questions of what happened on this play, what did you do on this play? And you can say, well, I did this, this, that, and the other. But when you come into film session on Mondays, the coach can look at the film and see exactly what you did, and the eye in the sky does not lie. You may not have known what you've done. You may have embellished the story a little bit, But the camera does not lie, and the camera always proves the truth. And so coaches have always done that throughout the years and always said that. And the camera has not had a losing season yet. It always wins.
Ah, I like it. The camera always wins. Okay, Reggie, I have been so excited to ask you this next question ever since I did an interview with a next-gen analytics expert from the NFL Network. She was talking about the evolution of the tight end position and how much it's playing a role in what we're seeing on the field in 2019. That was your position. So, Reggie, what is the primary role or roles of a tight end?
Well, it all depends on what a team needs in a tight end nowadays. You know, when I was playing, I was drafted back in 1999. Tight ends back then predominantly did a lot of blocking. So we had to square up one-on-one against defensive ends. I'm talking about big-time defensive ends. And big-time linebackers like a Bill Romanowski, Kevin Green, you know, guys like that, a Joey Porter, Michael Strahan. We had to square up against guys like that and square up against them one-on-one. That's a hard job, man. A very hard job. But we also had to get out and run routes and catch balls like receivers. So they counted on us to do both. And if you were a really good player to where you were very, very smart, sometimes they would line you out in the slot, and sometimes they would line you back in the backfield like an H-back or fullback so you can lead block for your running back. I did all of those things when I was a player. I caught passes. I blocked as a tight end, you know, against defensive ends and linebackers. I also lined up in the backfield to lead block for running backs, but I also lined up in the backfield as a third down protector running back for my quarterback in Carson Palmer. So it all depends on what the team needs you to do. I always have said, you know, besides the quarterback position, the tight end position is probably, and it depends on your job description, but it's probably one of the next hardest positions, in my opinion, because you have to block like an offensive lineman, but yet you have to run routes like a receiver, and that can be pretty tough. Now, in today's game, though, I have noticed there has been an evolution to the point now where it seems like a lot of teams are just going for the receiving tight ends that just can get out and catch a lot of passes, and that's good, too, because you can score a bunch of touchdowns. When you have a 6'5 guy, 6'6, 6'7, well, 6'5, 6'6 tight end matched up against a linebacker or a safety that's 5'9 or 5'10, maybe 5'11, that poses for an automatic mismatch. And so a lot of teams are looking for those type of Jimmy Grahams, Kelce, players like that, even Gronkowski who retired, because when you have that type of a receiver that has that type of tallness and size on them, they can just pretty much post up on a smaller guy and catch easy passes. I love blocking. I love catching the football. I don't think blocking is as crucial for a tight end position as it used to be. And sometimes you will see, Amy, just offensive coordinators adding an extra offensive lineman at the tight end position so that they can do the blocking and let the tight end run routes. But it's a great position to play, one of the best on the field, in my opinion. But, of course, I'm a little bit biased.
And you should be. It sounds like a lot of fun. You get to do a little bit of everything at the tight end position. Reggie, before I let you go, I would love to get your perspective on running quarterbacks. So Lamar Jackson's the one that just was highlighted on national TV in the victory against the Patriots. He can do pretty much everything at the QB position. Kyler Murray, another who can run. Russell Wilson has put a lot of miles on the field as well. When you are lined up offensively, how does that change things if there's a quarterback who can run all over the field?
Well, really, it makes the offense a lot easier. Remember that I played for a guy by the name of Michael Vick, number 7. Mm. I played with Mike 2 years here with the Falcons, and I tell you, he was so elusive. He made the offense a lot easier because he was such a threat where teams keyed on him, which meant that left some other guys open, wide open a lot of times. A lot of times they had a spy linebacker that would watch Mike wherever he went. So if he tried to rush, that linebacker would actually leave his responsibility was Mike, and he would go and try to rush and tackle Mike. Well, do that. That means there's some other open gap to where Mike could act like he was running the football but be on the bootleg and throw the ball to the tight end. So when you have a quarterback that's a rush, that kind of like a dual threat type of a quarterback like a Russell, you know, man, Wilson, I tell you, you got quarterbacks like that can run the football, but have really great IQ and can really use that leverage to pass the football, it makes your offense so much more explosive. It makes things easier for you. You can do a lot in your offense, and it can also cause a lot of mismatches when teams try to come up and tackle the quarterback because they think he's running, and he can just actually throw the ball over your head. I love to have those dual threat type of quarterbacks like a Steve Young. I mean, guys like that that was gritty, that would go get it, that didn't mind taking a hit, but can also throw the ball over your head, man. It just doesn't get much better than that. Now, I also love quarterbacks that just are not mobile and just can shred a defense. I love Joe Montana. Love watching Peyton Manning. Of course, love watching Brady. But, man, it's an awesome treat when you can have a dual threat for a quarterback because it just makes your offense just that much more explosive.
Reggie, I learn something every single time I talk to you. We first crossed paths in Atlanta at Super Bowl week, and it was such a delight to catch up with you. Plus, you gave me the Kyven Sweet barbecue sauce, which was fantastic. Former NFL tight end, also played at Mississippi State, so great perspective on the SEC. Thanks so much for a couple minutes tonight, Reggie.
You know, Amy, I thought you forgot about me, You know, I got to make sure I keep you on task. And I got to make sure I keep you on track. Because if I don't, you just go wayward and you forget all about your boy. But I'm so happy that you did enjoy the Kyven Sweet barbecue sauce, girl. Now, I need for you to cook some ribs now and don't burn me. If you burn, don't blame me because it's not the sauce. Right, Amy?
No, I cannot blame you. It would be my cooking faux pas. Reggie, it's so good to catch up with you. We're family now, and that means you can't get rid of me. So thank you.
Thanks so much, and God bless.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai. There's joy in every journey.